in a world of mindless movie cliches. One podcast fights back. Critics are calling it profound, epic, free. Prepare to revisit your video cassette memories of the 1980s and 90s. Behold, it's VHS Rewind.
Here's another throwback episode of VHS Rewind. After practically begging the guy who worked at the video store when I was a kid, he finally let me rent this classic on a beat-up, worn VHS. I felt like I was really watching something genuinely taboo. It is none other than the classic Faces of Death. Enjoy it.
Within the span of a heartbeat, your world could stop. There is no way to predict when you will become one of them. For the first time in cinema history, the greatest fear of all mankind will be graphically exposed. Now, a motion picture dares to take you beyond the threshold of the living, where you may discover your own Face of Death.
No!
This film will introduce you to a world where the bizarre is not uncommon and the normal seems out of place. Into a bloody world where violence creates an image not soon to be forgotten.
Une révolution!
If you have never thought about death, it's time you started thinking. Faces of Death. Now a major motion picture.
Hey everybody, welcome to the new episode of Foo Yuck, the podcast that makes humble suggestions of films that should be in your viewing experience and or your permanent library. I am joined once again by my cohort, co-host, conspirator, I got nothing else. Mark Giacoma.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark Giacoma.
And today's movie that we're going to be talking about is the VHS classic, The Legendary.
Well, actually, no. We watched the 30th anniversary.
Oh, did we? Yeah, but that's not much different. It is Faces of Death. And it's funny, you know, we had hoped to have this recorded and released by the recent Friday the 13th that passed.
Mm-hmm.
So there might have been some reason why we would do Faces of Death, because it's Friday the 13th and it's a scary day and this is a scary movie kind of. So, but we, of course, you know, schedules, kids.
So instead it's Tuesday afternoon.
we're recording this in broad daylight, which is kind of strange, because with Faces of Death, it deserves to be seen in the dark at night.
Admit it, Christopher, you were afraid to record this podcast.
I was afraid to see this movie again.
Were you really?
I was.
Me too. I sat there and I thought about it. I put it on. I'm like, I'm not watching this movie, and I would just skip it. And I'm like, I'll watch it tomorrow night. And every time I went to watch it, it would be like 11:30 at night or 12 or something.
I cannot tell you the impact that seeing this movie for the first time, like how many years ago, like in the eighth, you realize the 80s are like over 30 years ago.
Yeah. It's awesome.
So I just, it affected me in two very profound ways.
And how are those?
I'd like to go into for just 1 minute. Back when I first saw this, you know, I was already into movies, you know, whatever passed through the local theater.
Now, when did you see this?
I think it was like in, it must be the early 80s.
No, I mean, I'm going to look on something. This is something I did not look for. Please talk. I'm just going to look up for this one little specific.
So I saw it in like the early 80s. I was 8 years old. And
I remember years old.
I love movies. I love going to the movies. This was back when theaters had one screen, maybe two max.
It's when you could find a good adult theater in the middle of Kew Gardens or something.
You know, if something was on TV, I stayed up late. If it was early in the morning, I stayed up. I mean, I was obsessed with movies already.
Wow.
But at the time I saw this, the VHS revolution was coming. And, of course, my family couldn't afford a VCR. But my next door neighbor did. And he had some, you know, he was actually a profound influence, too, because he brought home stuff like Faces of Death, and seeing this on the video, it just made me realize, like, man, there are so many more films that can be had on VHS, and it just started this another obsession with videotapes and searching every videotape that came out and being introduced to, you know, Faces of Death. It's like you're seeing something that is taboo and just stuff you're never going to see on television.
Yeah, nobody ever did anything like this.
No.
And it was in the documentary section.
And this just started me, like, on searching for the most outre films. And it led shortly thereafter to Italian exploitation films like Fulci and porn. And again, this just opened the floodgates for me in terms of looking at films, for films. And the other profound way it affected me is that I don't want to die, ever. I don't want to be in a car accident, a plane accident, a bicycle accident. I don't want to be mauled by a bear. I don't want to be mummified. It really does, and we'll get into this as we talk, but it really does make you hate to go outside the house for fear that something is going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do have a confession to make, and I never...
You didn't watch the movie, did you?
I never, ever watched Faces of Death. When I was a kid, it would really be on the school bus that you heard about Faces of Death. Now, we're a little bit apart in age, but I think when you're younger, it's much more spread out. So, this movie came out in 78. I'm going to guess it hit video in, 82 or something?
That's what I was thinking, like 82, 83.
I mean, nothing was on video until the early 80s. So, you know, you would hear about these, you know, horrific scenes. You'd hear, the whole string of different things that went on. And the way the kids would talk about it, they'd always be like the two tough kids who, my dad let me watch Faces of Death. And you hear about the surfer who's all like washed up, and there's an orgy scene and they're covered in blood and it's all real. They have a monkey and they're bashing it with a hammer. And I was petrified to see this movie as a kid. I didn't want to see this movie. But I felt like I saw it vicariously through these other people who probably didn't even see it. They're probably, their older brothers saw it, and I was hearing a much more gruesome description.
And this is before internet, like before you would – there was no information on this movie, so you took
– I mean, we're talking like 85 was when I first heard of this.
You took what was presented at face value, and I just – when I was watching it, I was like, that is a poor monkey.
Yeah, oh my God. No. And I had like, you know, like a little dog at the time, and I'm like, oh my God, how do you do this?
Today you can see the fake stuff much easier than
what,
you
what do you mean? Then. It says documentary. As Chris just said, you know, I'd say a good 85% of what's in this movie is fake.
85.
Yeah, I think 1.5 scenes out of 10 are fake. I mean, are real. Now, when I say real, I mean the autopsy scenes.
I think those are real.
Yeah, those. There's no doubt that's real. The jumper's real.
You think the jump is real?
I don't know. Yeah, I think the jumper's real. I don't think that the jumper. I don't think the filming of the jumper on the ground is real, but I think when the guy jumped, it's real. Because it looks so lame that I could have done it better, right?
It does. I mean, it's dark and you can't really see.
And from what we understand, the surfer scene is very real.
Is it really?
It was in one of the articles that you actually sent me the article. I guess you didn't read it 100% through. He was filming the last scene of the movie. Which was the naked mother with the child at the end. And, you know, they're playing in a hot tub, and then they show them on the beach, and it's supposed to show kind of the all beginnings and ends are good. Like, these, not everything is horrible. It's a vicious circle. It is a vicious circle. But you get this kind of total hippie. I have a whole theory about what I think about the movie. I'm umming a lot today. I'm sorry. He was filming the scene with the mother and the small baby, and they hear a scream from down the beach, and it ends up that a surfer had washed ashore. So he felt as though it was almost a sign that he was doing the right type of movie. Like, that doesn't happen to just anyone. He has a whole film crew. They go down there, they film it, they have the coroner coming, they're putting him in the bag. It was all like, just happened to happen. You know, it's pretty crazy. We'll put a link to that story in the show notes.
Let's talk about what the film is first, and then we can. I mean, we can go through it, and we'll each put up a card, say fake, not fake.
Well, let me just say one thing though. When I did go and sit down and watch this movie, it was all alone, very dark house. And I decided to eat a very spicy treat. I made chicken hot wings. So I have there's not that many. It's like a few of them that I made. They're super spicy. And I'm eating them. I turn on the movie and the opening scene is heart surgery. You know, they have the whole chest spread and you see the heart like and I'm biting into the wing, and all of it, I look down and I'm like, all right, I can get through this. And then it just got more gruesome. I'm like, I just threw them away almost immediately. I actually had to just scrub my hands, and when I brushed my teeth, I had to get all remnants of flesh out of me. And I'm not one to be a vegetarian anymore, but.
The slaughterhouse scene was not far from there, so maybe it's good that you got it.
That didn't affect me as much. But I'm sorry. Let's do what you said. Let's go through the film. And
So Faces of Death is a pseudo documentary that aspires to some philosophical deepness. Is that a word? Philosophical depth,
right?
With a narrator host. Francis Gross.
Dr. Gross.
Now, when we first see him, I guess, you know, it's like you said, the film opens with the open heart surgery.
Yes.
And then Dr. Gross comes out of this room, walks down a hall, which looks like my apartment.
Actually, it looks like a rundown, like...
Something.
I mean,
it's not a hospital.
I hope it's not a hospital.
There's some overdubbing there. Doctor, you know, a loudspeaker. Doctor, blah, blah, please call, blah, blah.
Please refill the coffee maker.
So this is automatically, I mean, this guy, it looks like a dentist's office. It's not with really tacky wallpaper. I don't know if you noticed that wallpaper, but.
I noticed the door had wear on it. Like almost like they pried it open at one point or something.
And then Gross turns around to start addressing the audience, and his glasses are askew, and he's just like the most unkempt doctor I've ever seen.
He's the guy who'll turn to you and go, I don't know, you got cancer. What do you want me to do?
And he tells us about a dream he had about a woman who's being buried. And, of course, the camera is in the coffin with her, and the dirt gets thrown on there. And he's saying how it started his lifelong obsession with understanding death. And right at the beginning, you get a sense for the writing in this movie, of the narration of he says, some of my friends thought I was a compulsive maniac.
Right.
And the others thought I was deranged and insane. So he has a lot of, like, just understatements or just bizarre thoughts about death and what we see on the screen that, again, we'll go into some of my favorite quotes as we go through.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he introduces us first to things like mummies in Mexico, dogfighting.
The dogfighting scene I thought was pretty brutal.
You know, the most disgusting, I guess, the stuff that really gets to you is the animals, the way animals are treated throughout this movie.
I don't know. Yes and no. Well,
I don't care. It's just there's a lot of animal activity in here, and it's really disconcerting. I mean, so you do have the dog fight, which is pretty brutal.
I think it's brutal. Personally, I don't like those kind of dogs. I think they're monsters.
They are.
So I really genuinely don't like those kind of dogs. I mean, I don't want to bring harm to them. It's horrible what people do with these dogs. I thought it was brutal, but it didn't surprise me. And what I wonder, you know, there's a lot of dog fighting going on, like Michael Vick and that kind of stuff. I wonder if Faces of Death is responsible for bringing that to the modern culture and bringing it, you know, that one little short scene, what is it, 40 seconds long?
Yeah.
I wonder if that little 40 second scene is literally responsible for opening up the eyes of urban youth of throughout the 80s, because the 80s is where dogfighting really got big, especially in, you know, more urban areas. So I can't help but wonder about that.
I don't know. You think Michael Vick saw Faces of Death? I don't know.
I don't even know if Michael Vick could spell Faces of Death.
I don't know why, like, cockfighting. That's another thing.
Cockfighting is a real kind of... Is that more of a Mexican, like, thing? I don't really feel that bad about cockfighting. I don't know.
That's okay.
It's not okay. No, you know, no animal type of cruelty is okay. But okay. I just feel... do you have a dog or do you have any pets?
No. No, I used to have a dog. But
all right. But so, you know, like, they're very affectionate, loving creatures. I have a Maltese, for crap's sakes. It'd be wonderful to have a dog-fighting Maltese, like, pen. With, like, padded areas.
But the way these dogs Spritz just, bottles. Like, attacked each other and just, like, putting their teeth right into the other one's neck. And
it's vicious.
I was like, wow. And again, it's upsetting. And that's one of the first of the upsetting ones. You know, there's a bullfight scene that I thought, from recollecting from when I first saw it, I thought it was longer. I thought we actually saw some bullfighting stuff. But
you can go to Spain right now and see a bullfight that was much more vicious than what was shown.
Yeah, I was surprised. Again, I really thought there was more to the bullfighting. And I'm surprised there wasn't, because there's something that...
My wife went to a bullfight just... Well, it's been a while now. But quite a few years ago, she went to Spain, went to a bullfight, and they killed the bull, you know, in front of probably 1,000 people. Yay!
Maybe the bullfight scene I'm thinking of was in part two. I don't know. There's a Faces of Death part two.
And three, I believe.
And four. I think there's a four, but maybe four is the one that's made up of scenes from the first three. Something like that. But I do remember that two and three, no good. Not even a curiosity value there. I mean, it's just very poorly made. Not that this is great, but...
What was the scene that followed the dogfight?
So there we go into the jungle where there was a piranha attack on a snake.
Right.
Which I think was fake because, you know, you just see inserts of a piranha, then the fish, and then bubbles all over the camera. You don't see anything. And then there was Amazon or was it Africa where we see the cannibal tribe called, I thought they said Hebrews.
I don't think they were the Hebrews.
So I had to play it back, but it was like Hebrews. The sound on this video is not that great.
No.
Even though it is the DVD
release, it's the remastered DVD release.
No, I think it's the original, you know, you just can't better things that were done.
Right. I mean, it's as good as it gets.
30 years ago.
Right.
So, like that piranha attack on the fish, which is. You know, again, it's all like inserts. It's probably not real. But
I don't know. I mean, piranhas supposedly are flesh-eating, vicious fish.
I doubt that they actually had a camera to get this. But this was the first instance of where the musical accompaniment to these Faces of Death is actually kind of comical.
Right. Up to this point. I mean, it was kind of one movie up to this point, and then it's almost as though John Schwartz got the idea... I have an idea. Let's put in a comedic element to
in
this
case,
whole thing.
It was a polka. I thought that's my note. I wrote polka.
It kind of reminded me of those old movies that they would show us, like in school. You know, like science movies with like that goofy music in the background, like yeah, for one nerdy kid who's like has to stand by the projector because it starts skipping. He's the only one who knows how to do it.
And then this cannibal tribe, the Hebrews, I'll call them the Hebrews,
not the Hebrews.
They get the monkey with the blowgun.
Right.
I don't know if that, I thought that was real. That looked real to me.
What, the blowgun?
Yeah. And then the monkey like pulling at the things that are in its.
Could have been a tranquilizer dart too. Like it could have been from like a zoo. With a tranquilizer dart.
True, but still, like it looked like it hurt, and that was a big needle, and I was like,
true.
Oh. And of course, the sound, which is overdubbed, is just an hysterical monkey sound.
Yeah, it's like, rah, rah, yeah.
And then after that is another tribe. I wrote the Messi or Maasai, and they're poking the animal with a stick and drinking the blood. I thought that was real.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see the point go in and the blood comes out like a tap.
But it's been discussed that the tribe scene is 100% fake.
Is it really? Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
It's all actors.
That one had me fooled back in 1980 whatever. I was believing it. They really traveled to the far ends of the earth. It was probably made in California or something.
Right in the desert, like with not in the desert, but you know, in the zoo.
And then starts like the scenes that were really, really disturbing, which starts with a farmer who cuts the head off a chicken, which again, I remember when I was a kid that really.
Oh, you saw this for real? You saw a chicken get their head cut off?
No. I mean, in the movie.
Oh.
And a woman farmer, like just nonchalantly chops the head off.
See, that did not get to me.
What
if anything,
is wrong with you? You're not human.
Because chickens are, you know, I don't know. I just look at chickens and I think.
But then the thing flops around without its head, and then you see the final kick says,
But that's all you know, nerves. That's the brain is now severed. It's it can't see anything. It can't. It's just flopping.
And again, with this Face of Death, with the beheading and everything, they're playing like some Muzak version of Old MacDonald.
Yes, exactly.
As the thing's jumping around, so it becomes really comical.
Then thump!
But then the slaughterhouse footage starts, and that's where I don't know. I should.
So you
be
a, never saw that kind of stuff, right?
Nope. Certainly not when I was a kid, and right. Even now it's like really, I can't. I eat that stuff. I just can't. I can't.
I'm not going to say it's a lot better now, but it really kind of is. I mean, slaughterhouses have come a long way since the past 30 years.
So they talk about – I want you to weigh in here since you're of the Jewish persuasion.
Right.
They talk about the method of killing the animals called koshering.
Right. And
where a rabbi comes over and slits the throat.
Now, I need to look into this because as far as I know – this is not how.
I don't know.
This is not way of making something kosher. I really need to look into this because, as far as I know, the animal is slaughtered in a very quick and humane way, not in a way that is literally suffering. Now, I think those scenes are real.
This was the 70s, remember?
Right, it was the 70s in somebody's backyard, barn.
I'm sure they've updated our way of slaughtering animals for our food.
I need to look into this more. The draining of the blood from the meat is a fact that kosher meat does not has the blood drained from it. It's also blessed by a rabbi. But I don't believe that the animal is slaughtered in this fashion.
Which should be pointed out that this film was produced, written, directed
by a Jewish man,
John Schwartz. I think that's his name, John Allen Schwartz.
Yes, and he's that's also, good. As far as I know, a proud Jew. He actually has a YouTube channel with his wife called Two Jews on Film, and their tagline is tearing apart their marriage one film at a time. And I think that it's a cute. Should really check it out. It's I've watched maybe 6 episodes, and I think it's
with Siskel and Ebert as the pinnacle, and us as the other end. Where are they? Are they?
They are.
Is it funny?
Well, you know, it's the wife, Joan. Joan and John. How cute is that? Joan is very animated. Like she's very like. Personable, and she talks right to the camera, and she's very, she's much more brighter, I could say. And John is more passive, and he's more opinionated. So that's what's really funny about the connection. Now, we're talking about 3-minute episodes. We're not talking about a dissection of film. They're sitting in their, kind of garden backyard with their little dog. And they're just kind of hanging out, talking about the newest movies that they might have seen. You know. Speaking of which, I'm going to take a little bit of a tangent here. They had spoken about the movie The Conjuring. They both seemed to have really liked it. John said that he still had his opinions about it. It's really funny, because the guy never seems to be totally happy with any movie. And I can respect that. Now, I watched The Conjuring last night. I put it on at about 11:30 at night.
Isn't that still in theaters? How did you do that?
And
get me a copy.
This is from the future. Did I say The Conjuring? I was in the theater at 11:30 last night. And I started it. Anyway, I started the film the other night. And I'm watching it and I'm like, I can't watch this movie. It's going to be scary. Everyone is saying it's so scary. It's so scary. I watched the opening scene, and I don't know. I freaked myself out. I'm like, I can't watch it. It's way too scary. And last night I just said, all right, I'm just going to sit down and watch the whole thing. It had a few scary moments, but being that I just watched Faces of Death a few days ago, this movie was not even a little scary in comparison. You know, it's like, you know what? If my 5-year-old son jumps out of the closet as I walk by, it's going to scare me. And that's exactly what The Conjuring was, with some makeup here and there and some ghosts jumping off a bureau. And I thought it was good. It was definitely a good movie.
Or
it's based on
activity.
It's
or?
Based on true events, which immediately gives you chills to the spine. That this took place in Rhode Island, and these events inspired the Amityville Horror movie. You know.
So is it a thumbs up for you or no?
I thought it was definitely worthwhile. But I was I guess a little stigmatized from Faces of Death. John, cool. you scared the hell out of me from a 30-plus-year-old movie. 35-year-old movie, you know? And, you know, his movie made me put down the food and feel gross. And, you know, there were scenes where I was like, whoa.
Which, speaking of which, following the slaughterhouse footage, if that didn't make you go, whoa.
See, I've seen worse. That's why. I'm just,
How could you have seen worse? How?
You don't want to see. I don't even want to share it with you, you know? Not in this type of event. You know, like, people, you know, you have these terrible abuse of, you know, slaughterhouse abuse and stuff. It's terrible.
Well, if the slaughterhouse footage didn't get you to go, whoa, I am sure the next scene did, because that is one of the iconic scenes from the movie where a bunch of people go to some unnamed restaurant in some unnamed faraway place to have an entree of a monkey's brains.
Right. Now, this scared the hell out of me when I was a kid. This is one of the scenes I've seen.
Back then, I thought this was very real. But now when you look at it and you see, first of all, the waiter looks like a porn star because he's got a porn stash. And then the guy, the other waiter who actually brings in the monkey, he looks like a porn star because he's got a porn stash.
I want to know where I can get one of these tables.
I know.
You know what I thought? This is what
a bunch of really poor actors sit around a table. As
yeah.
They are terrible.
You have the one guy like covering his own eyes as he's doing it. Like, why are you doing it then? Like, what?
And they bring the monkey in and the table slides apart and they put the monkey in a hole that keeps its head above the table, but the rest of its body is trapped under the table.
Right.
And the waiter brings out some hammers for everybody, and everybody has to hit the monkey on the head.
These are like crab hammers or something.
Right. and they proceed to do that. And again, just when I was a kid, this thing freaked me out because they kill the monkey.
I thought it was going to be like a whack-a-mole. Like, I didn't think that they would put the head in kind of a, what do you call that? Like that they would use, I forget what it's called. You put the head and the hands in it. Anyway, I didn't think it would keep that, you know, the head right there. I thought that, you know, the monkey would go in this hole and then try to get out and he'd go, bam, you know.
It looks like it was spinning, you know, he was spinning around, you know, because he could move his head around in a circle, but, you know, his whole body around in a circle. But
it looked very real. And supposedly, this is something that people do. But that was not the case for this particular filming.
So Mr. John Schwartz says this was fake, but it does look, the actors don't sell it. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
But once the monkey's dead and they cut it open, like, I still think it looks pretty good.
You know, when they were pulling the brain from the spinal cord and stuff, that looked pretty good, except for the fact that the entire face looked like it was plastic. If this was an actual dead animal, probably the whole head would be bashed up in the face.
Yeah, I was wondering why there was no, you know,
the tongue may be hanging out. There may be, moisture on different parts of the face. The eyelid would be drooping of some sort, and it was just like a completely relaxed looking stationary face. So I think it was just a plastic rubber or something.
Well, the monkey brain sequence was probably our biggest one, because everything was going to be done in close-up. Because you're sitting at this table, and we're showing how, you know, these, you know, the people dine on monkey brains, and there's a special table that's rigged for it, and a special mallet, and we were using a live monkey, and then we had to make a dummy monkey to crack the skull and peel back the skin. So that was going to be the most challenging of all of them.
That's all I have.
We had to make a mallet for the monkey to get hit with, because of course you couldn't hit the monkey with a real one. Though for that film, you'd think you could. But it was a trained monkey, actually. So, and the guy who's in the film with the turban and the beard is actually the trainer. And they had custom made that little table with the little cage and little yoke for his neck to do the little exorcist routine for the monkey, always spinning around. He loved doing that. But we'd hit him with the rubber mallet, and the monkey would end up biting the mallet. So they're always cutting away from the mallet sequence. You know, the monkey hit him in the head, and then you'd go, and then you'd come back and hit him again. And finally, the monkey conks out. And when you finally see the conked out head, it's the switch to the gelatin head. We made the skull to fit inside, and it was a hollow plaster skull. And when everything was assembled, it was a cauliflower brain, sculpted to look like a little brain, filled with lemon jello with a little orange in it, just to kind of off-color it a little. And that was filled inside the skull.
Then before we put the skull in, we put some layers on it to give it to give us some membrane. So did we do that sequence? And then inside the skull, we put cauliflower. And we colored it. I always forget exactly the color. I know the color was off because we were laughing about it. But the color, it was sort of a greenish gray that we made it. And we just did it with food coloring so that when we went back to shoot with the actors, they could actually just eat it.
The monkey head was supposed to go in the ice chests to keep it cold. It didn't. And the reaction you see on the camera was actually priceless, because the cauliflower had gone rancid.
Cauliflower had turned because it sat there for, I forget how long, but it was a while. And as I remember, I think what we ended up doing was taking it out and then just repacking it fresh that day. And it's so funny because it's the it's one of the most talked about sequences as being absolutely real.
I was, to this day, I'm watching it today. I was still kind of, it's still kind of, maybe I was referring back to, maybe it's nostalgia. I don't know. I was like, oh, that still looks good. It's the actors.
Yeah, the actors are the ones that look fake.
You know, Gross's narration is like, and they do this because eating brains brings greater wisdom and brings you closer to God. And
now let me ask you, with the narrator, I feel as though he's going through a journey. He's trying to find out why people do these things. He's almost trying to find peace within it. He doesn't understand it.
Too, you know, he's not real too. Dr. Gross. It's not real.
No, I know, but I'm seeing the actor, the character, is on a journey. And, you know, there was that one scene in the slaughterhouse where he makes that comment that this is brutal enough for anybody to turn into a vegetarian. Right? It was something I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, again, he has these philosophical musings of, if I had to be my own provider, I would definitely consider being a vegetarian.
Right, exactly.
We don't deal with, as a consumer, we don't deal with the process. We only deal with the final product. And they cut to a picture of a steak.
Right, and it's like a tan steak. It's like a steak covered in sand or something. It's like the weirdest color steak I've ever seen in my whole life. It's like covered in peanut butter. It's like so beige. It's, you know, it's, again, these scenes are very brutal. This is a movie I don't think is for everyone. But I do think that the narrator is on a journey, and I think that he's trying to find morality with all of this. He's trying to find, why do people do this?
I think it's more that this is an exploitation movie. The filmmakers just wanted to make a buck. I don't know. I wrap it within this pseudo.
I don't know. I give more credence to this film. I think this was a genuine journey to, and he had a message. I don't know much about John, but I have a feeling the guy's a total hippie. I think that he's about peace and love. He's about the good in people. I think, though, that he's disappointed because that good in people is very rare. People are genuinely horrible people. But I think that he is not. I think that he's a total, with the no nukes message at the end, that awful Jesus song. I mean, Jesus doesn't live here anymore.
I hope we can play that. I hope we can play that over the end credits of our podcast.
With all mankind, Jesus doesn't live here anymore. We've looked everywhere. We need him like before. Look inside yourself, you will find why Jesus doesn't live here anymore.
Now, after that we get to the cult cannibal.
Oh wait, there was a few things, you know, again, what, more animal stuff follows that? The monkey brains.
Oh really? I don't remember.
The seal clubbing.
That was real.
And it's just like, oh, I don't want to see that, because then they I don't know what they're getting off the seals. They're taking the skin or the fur or I don't know, whatever they have.
They just take, yeah.
And you see this field of like dead carcasses. Stripped carcasses that, you know, again, just like, oh man, that is, why am I watching this?
Right, and you see there's, you know, hundreds of them.
When I was a kid, I understood why I was watching it. I just, wow, just, hmm. And then the next, after that, though, it sort of slows down a little bit, because you have one incident, I don't know if you remember this, where there's an alligator in somebody's backyard or something.
Yes.
Had this news reporter who looks like Sean.
Oh, it's great.
Those way. Balding head and the curly hair and the super, super disco suit that he's wearing on camera.
It is so not a newscast. It's the fakest newscast I've ever seen in my whole life.
And his pants are pulled up over his belly button. And he's trying to be cool, and he's got a crotch, you know, bulge. And I was like, oh, that's just sick. And then there's a really fake bit. So I think all that stuff with the alligator was just, eh.
What happened with the alligator again? Please refresh.
Remember it's in the backyard, and this faux reporter interviews a mother and her daughter. The daughter was kind of hot. And they don't want to go swimming, so the police come over and say, where is it? And the guy goes over there. The police guy goes over there in the boat, and the alligator somehow flips the guy out of the boat and mauls him and goes away, and Gross is like, and the hunted becomes the hunter.
Maybe I was dozing off at this point.
Yeah. Really. Then there's a bit with a foreign terrorist that is really just, you know, boring as hell. Fast forward, and then we get to the other iconic scene in the movie.
See, these are all journeys. This is, then you get to the religious aspect of it.
Well, wait, before we get there, we go to the...
How much did I skip in this movie?
We go to the electrocution scene.
Oh, yeah, how can I forget the electrocution scene?
Which is where most of the poster art for this movie comes from.
That's where I noticed the music, like, being used heavily.
In 1974, Larry DeSilva brutally raped and then murdered an 84-year-old woman. After a lengthy trial, he was sentenced to death by means of electrocution. Because of the general outcry against the inhumane method of hanging, the electric chair was the next step in the development of capital punishment. When I asked him if he was afraid, he looked at me and smiled. But when the guards led him down death row toward the execution chamber, DeSilva seemed nervous and totally disoriented. He finally told me he was scared to die. When I asked him if he ever thought about this possibility as he murdered the defenseless woman, he replied, "All I wanted was her goddamn wallet, and the bitch gave me a hard time." The process is simple. The victim is placed in a chair where electrodes are attached to his leg and head. These two areas are sponged down beforehand with a brine solution to conduct electricity. Strapped to a seat that you will never leave alive is a situation that I still cannot justify. A man on death row is in a continuous battle with time and bureaucracy. When both fall into the proper alignment, the condemned knows that death will be the result. During the final preparations, those of us watching this man could feel the fear being transmitted from his body. Even though he had committed an inexcusable crime, I began to wonder if two wrongs really make a right. His eyes are taped to prevent them from popping out of their sockets. The next step is the flick of a switch which sends a current of 2,000 volts through the victim's body. Then the current is brought down to 1,000 volts after a few seconds. By this point, the man is unconscious, and the whole process is repeated as many times as necessary until the prisoner is proclaimed dead by the physician on duty.
So this guy who they make a point of saying raped an 84-year-old woman... raped and murdered an 84-year-old woman. I mean, that's
we don't mean to laugh, but it's just like,
again,
oh,
this is all fake. This is all fake.
I mean, stuff like this happens.
There's a gas chamber scene, which is boring.
I thought the gas chamber scene was pretty cool.
Really? You can't see gas. You know, you can just see somebody.
Yeah, but how often can you just look at somebody and see them die?
I think that's...
I thought that scene was fake.
Say, I'm holding up my fake card on the gas chamber in the execution.
Like, do you think they have a window like that?
Maybe they do.
I guess they have to.
Imagine.
Remember, he had the stethoscope. You know, so you can hear if the heart was still beating.
Yeah. I like on the electrocution scene where they zap them
and the eyes start bleeding.
And then the doctor comes in and goes, nope. You know, just an exaggerated shake of the head. Nope, got to do it again.
Do it again, Jimmy.
He's not done yet.
It just would have been great, like, cut to a cop who's smoking a cigarette, you know, like, and a coffee. See, like, a little bottle of
switch.
See a little bottle of whiskey on the side. It'd be like Boss Hogg from Dukes of Hazzard.
But they're strapping the guy in for the electrocution. During the electrocution, there's like this Laurel and Hardy type comedy, 1920s type comedy music going on.
Again, it's kind of a polka kind of music.
It just diffused some of the impact. But again, I know it's fake now, but it holds up. It's a great image, too, of, like, the guy strapped in and the blood coming out from under the bandages around his eyes. And do your eyes really – do eyes
from what
pop
I understand,
out?
they do cover the eyes.
Is that right? Okay.
But I don't know if it's because they pop out. I think that it has to do with the fact that maybe your eyes open wide. I don't know. Maybe. I mean, you're technically cooking a person, right? I mean
– I guess.
Not really sure. I also don't think it's as physical as they showed.
Where he jumps around? You know,
yeah, where this like metal thing starts slipping down, and you're kind of in the back of your mind saying, ooh, is that tape going to fall off? It's like the cheapest, like, you know, tape that barely sticks to his head.
And then after that, it gets to your favorite scene. After this point, though, I need to say that it really...
My favorite scene. I just jumped to it because it was probably the pinnacle of, like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, when you're a kid, like, what? Blood? So, sex?
Gross tells us that he was granted permission to film a cult doing a ceremony where they will eat something. Was it a cadaver?
Yes.
And they cut it open, and, you know, it's all these typical, real typical 1970s in a way, I'm a cult hippie in garb and dressed like, right out of Manson's.
But you love this. I mean, this is exactly the kind of scene that I personally think that you love in a movie.
Again,
it has the obvious ADR track.
The actors aren't selling it. That's, and it looks a little fake, and it should
a little fake. It looks completely fake.
The leader of the cult in this scene is actually John Alan Schwartz.
Yeah. Bravo.
They do the ceremony, and then they start eating bits from the cadaver.
Yeah,
and
I wonder if Joan's in that scene. I gotta look closer now.
And then they have an orgy.
And it's like, I would say, I mean, I was probably 12 years old, maybe 11 years old when I saw this part. And, you know, you don't usually get to see this type of stuff on TV like back in those days. Especially, you know, covered in blood. And it's crazy. Right? And like I said, the ADR track was so obvious. It's so loud and perfectly recorded. But I thought it was an interesting scene.
It goes on a little too long.
Way too long. It's gratuitous. You get like the boob shots, you get like the covering in blood, it's the money shot. It's the perversion of the entire thing. And I think even at the time, cults were like kind of a big deal, right? Late 70s and throughout the 80s.
70s, yeah.
They became bigger in the 80s. I mean.
And then after this, I really was like struggling to maintain interest in the movie because nothing else approaches the iconic status or the even the gross status of the slaughterhouse scenes or the iconic status of the electrocution or monkey brain scene. I think there's there's a bear scene where a bear attacks some dork.
Well, you're skipping the born again people. There were a bunch of born again Christians with the poisonous snakes.
I was like, that's boring, and I expected.
I thought it was fun. I was like waiting like for one of these kids to get bitten by a snake. And the reason why I thought it was fun is I thought the narration was very fun.
I thought, all right, maybe it was funny like to see all these people just jumping around like maniacs. But
I had a good time with that.
Very
scene.
Foolish.
And then you're missing Mary Alice Wright, who's the jumper from 1977, and they were playing like Dixieland music.
So you think that jumper was real? I don't know. I'm calling fake on that one.
I think that the jumper from the building was real. I think the one on the ground was made up. You know, like they just kind of like dressed somebody the same way and threw some ketchup on top.
And then there are scenes of, what was it, volcanoes and flooding, which kind of reminded us of New Orleans. But
oh, wait, you mentioned the surfer scene, right?
No, we didn't mention that yet. That's at the end.
Okay. Now, there's also Sam Berkowitz.
All right, you talk about Sam
Berkowitz. But this is what's funny.
Not the son of Sam, it should be noted.
But this is what's funny is Sam Berkowitz is one of the he's one of the stars of the movie. Oh no, I forgot it. No, that's funny. He gets on IMDb. He has a listing as the cryogenic patient, but he's dead. He plays himself. Okay. That's just really interesting. Anyway, he died on July 8th, 1978, and this movie came out in, I believe, the beginning of November of 78. So it's all pretty legit. He was cryogenically frozen in July of 78 and stored in Northern California by a company called, I have it here, TransTime Company. And I looked this up, and they still have a website, TransTime.com. And it has not been updated for a decade. But it's still there. I'm assuming Sam is still on ice. I don't really understand the whole idea of if you die and then you're frozen, what are they going to do, defrost you and you're still dead?
Interesting. You know, also, like, what happens? They freeze you, but the company goes bankrupt. What happens to your body?
I think you create a trust so that you can be, purchased and then stored.
He's like in some underground bunker, and he's going to stay there.
I think that they probably never froze him for real. And what? They're just,
that part is fake?
Yeah. I get the idea that the whole cryogenic thing is a big scam.
Isn't there a famous baseball player who's been frozen? Ted Williams, isn't he like in...
I don't know.
He's frozen.
That sounds like a... I don't know.
Walt Disney or somebody.
Walt anyway. Disney was like the big... big story, but I don't believe it's true.
After that, I think there was like a plane crash footage, which again, I...
Oh, wait. The bear scene made me laugh, actually.
It was... I think it's fake, and so... You know, guy gets out of a car because a bear is...
Well, nothing really happens. You know, because the bear's... It's just a shaky camera.
With his arm or something. He just...
Who throws little pieces of bread at a bear?
There's a woman in the car, and the guy gets out with his camera to get a closer... I don't know why he's getting out of the car except to get attacked.
Right. Look what I can do.
And so he gets attacked, and again, it doesn't look very convincing, and you see the bear running off with, like, I can only assume is a fake arm.
Yeah, by the time the movie has gotten to this point, it's turning into a poorly acted movie.
Yeah.
It's more skits.
Yep. And it's not really very interesting, and it ends with, like you mentioned, like, scenes of nuclear protesters. A guy sets himself on fire to protest nuclear. Am I saying that right? Nuclear? George Bush has got me.
Nuclear. Yeah.
Nuclear.
Yeah. Nuclear. The hippie ending with the no nukes message, I felt as though that was a little bit of a push on John's part. He really, I felt as though this is something that was truly too, he really believed in. I don't think anybody could really feel as though nuclear power... Not to get into too much of my belief, but I feel like nuclear power really should be the future. Because I don't believe in the whole Fukushima problem. These are all things that could have been avoided. Anyway, the music Jesus Doesn't Live Here Anymore is played there. And I'll play a little clip right now. And it's just incredible.
Yeah, I love that song.
I'm going to make an MP3 of that for you and send it to you.
You know what? I thought that was like a real song and like some 70s singer actually sung it, but no.
No, well, it's all the music. Let's see. You have Faces of Death theme. You have Burning Soul, Life. Jesus Doesn't Live Here Anymore. And is that it? Oh, these are all performed by Gene Cower. Or Cower?
That's probably just another pseudonym for John Alan Schwartz.
And Burning Soul. Did I say Burning Soul? And Jesus Doesn't Live Here Anymore. The
Life plays over the end credits with the baby and the mother. And it's all a vicious circle.
But you're skipping over a few interesting things. You know the cholera? Cholera? Is that how you pronounce it? The disease?
Cholera?
In Africa? Cholera, yeah. It's interesting how they're giving the vaccine for that, right?
Yeah.
And do you notice that they give the shot and she takes the same needle and puts more of the vaccine in it and waits for the next person? So you see the birth of AIDS. You know what I mean? It's you're sharing this needle between each and every sick person. Like, what the hell do you think is going to happen? Like, oh my God. It was just so disturbing to see that.
It was fake.
Why would that scene be fake? They could easily get stock footage of giving vaccines to very sick children.
Same needle? I don't think. Even in the 70s, they would have done that.
Why? What disease would you have gotten?
I don't...
Seriously. You
could have gotten an infection or...
I don't know. I think that... I really don't... I think that was a legit little scene.
I think there was like some skydiving footage, which... Again, not very interesting.
So, what about the stuntman?
The car stunt?
Yeah.
Again, you it's hard to... If they meant to show us something gross, I mean, there was nothing really there that I could make out.
Here's the thing, though. I paused it.
Stuff, they showed, like, lumps of something, but I couldn't make out what it was, so it wasn't really that gross to me.
on the car jump into the lake, I paused it, and it was for a movie called Hellraisin. And I couldn't find this movie. So I don't know if that was just for the movie, or if this movie is just not available, but you would imagine that Internet Movie Database would have some reference to this movie. I mean, they have movies that aren't available anywhere.
I mean, that could have been just a working title. The title could have changed.
Usually pops up. Even working titles usually pop up. Especially if there's that type of footage that exists.
All right, I'll take a look around the internet while... Hellraiser.
That's it. But yeah, all in all, you have that at the end where the mother is walking. And, you know, with the surfer scene, though, I thought it was almost humorous that the guy covers the body with the yellow tarp just as a wave is coming in to take it, to, like, make it more... Do you remember this? It was like, what's wrong with this guy? He's covering him to give, you know, because the guy's filming it. And he puts in the exact moment where the water's going to come in and make it 10 times more difficult now. And it pulls it away. It's just very typical. You know? So did you find anything on Hellraisin?
No.
Yeah, I mean...
nothing around.
But all in all, I did enjoy Faces of Death. I don't think this is a movie I need to own. I don't think I really need to watch this again. Maybe I'll bring this to my son's attention when he's...
12 or 13.
Watch it with him and let him know what's real, what's not.
Yeah, I won't watch it again, but I think there's a reason to watch it. It really does, again, makes me frightened of dying and going outside and being in a car accident or a plane crash or a...
Now, was this movie really banned in other states?
That was the... that. I mean, that could all be made up.
Because there were also fake Faces of Death.
What do you mean?
Like, you know, kind of... other people would just make these kind of death movies.
Oh, yeah. Like, tons came out that after it...
And it's like banned in 21 counties in Oklahoma or something.
I mean, that just shows you, like, how much this is, like, entered our culture and Faces of Death. I mean, I sent you a link to, which I'll put on our website, a link to a Muppet Faces of Death that was done by Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes then.
Which was hilarious.
No, I really think it was really good.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
I'm just looking this up real quick. Faces of Death on the, I'm going to the website of knowledge. Wikipedia.
I just want to see who put out. There is a 30th anniversary DVD that's out.
Yeah, I didn't know this, that John Schwartz was credited as Alan Black for the writing.
Look what his director pseudonym is. Conan Le Sinclair.
Sinclair.
Le Sinclair.
I'll have my pommes frites.
Really, I don't know what he had. What he had to be ashamed of. This is a...
Michael Carr played the narrator.
I could swear, and I remember this vividly, I could swear that I saw that guy on a local car dealership commercial.
Yeah, but he looks like a guy who would be a used car dealer.
It was just really funny that I know that guy. I remember. It was WNEW, Channel 5. It was in the daytime. I was home for some reason. I know I saw that guy there. I know it was him. But that's the only other place I would have seen him.
Hey, do you know that Dr. Gross has an umlaut over the O?
Does he really?
I think. Maybe it's not an umlaut. No, it's not an umlaut. It's a line. What do you call that?
Something on your screen?
A whoops? No.
Yeah, maybe.
No, really. It's...
I don't know.
That's interesting.
Accent aigu? That's French.
Aigu? Maybe it is an umlaut. Gross. Wouldn't it be gross then? Here we go. Actually, Yahoo's not bad with these kind of answers, you know? Yeah, it's not banned. I can't find that it's banned anywhere. But, you know, it's funny. This movie doesn't seem to want to, you know, die. No pun intended. Or, actually, all puns intended. This movie is really as relevant and disturbing as it was 35 years ago. I think there's something to be said for that.
I think it has. I think, again, it still has some impact. Even with a lot of it being faked.
You know, I think that also people weren't prepared for this type of film when it came out.
That's for sure.
I mean, you don't see this kind of stuff ever. It's just a really, really interesting, crazy, I don't know, experiment in death. But anyway, all in all, I'm glad I watched it again. And I think you are as well. We're going to put a bunch of links in the show notes. Please subscribe to this podcast, Foo Yuck, PHUYUCK.com. If you have any questions or comments, shoot us an email. It's all up there. Do you want to add anything else to the
Nope. I hope everybody comes back for our next episode. We're not sure what we're going to do yet. I think we're going to start a month through Halloween of horror movies.
Yes.
But not sure yet.
Starting with Ernest.
Ernest
goes to camp. that would be actually pretty damn not good.
I don't think
good.
Anybody is covering the Ernest movies.
I don't think we should either. I wouldn't mind doing something like a Jodorowsky film, but I don't know how you feel about that kind of stuff.
You know, I'm going to probably put my street cred into doubt, but I don't think I've seen a Jodorowsky all the way through. I don't think I've seen any.
Hmm.
I don't even have El Topo.
I have. I can always
Holy Mountain. I have the soundtracks, which is funny, but I don't have. Well, I don't have those films. I've never watched them.
You know, El Topo is scary in points, but I don't know. I think that's a future thing. That's a bigger taking on for a show. But horror-wise, I'm not really sure. I think I
just threw that out there. We might not do horrors all
no,
the way.
No, no, I think we definitely should. I know I would enjoy to. I want to watch more horror movies. I would do The Conjuring, actually. If you want,
really?
If you end up liking it.
Is there any Vera Farmiga nudity in the movie?
Yeah, she's really cute. Like, she's a really, really good-looking, interesting-looking woman. None. She, you know, her younger sister is in that TV show. Darn. What's that horror TV show done by the guys who do Glee?
I have no idea. I don't watch much TV.
I know
Vera Farmiga is in that Psycho prequel series that they got going, Bates Motel.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I forgot.
It's all about Norman Bates as a kid with Vera Farmiga as his mom, crazy mom, which I have been meaning to check out only because of Vera Farmiga, but...
Hold on, give me a second on this because I want to find the name of...
I think...
I did actually an episode on For Your Consideration, the other podcast, where the sister was in the movie. Come on, where are the fun facts? I can't find anything here. darn it.
Preparation.
All right. Anyway, it's like one of these kind of horror movies. It's like people move into a haunted house and all these things happen, but it's a TV show. American Horror Story. That's what it's called. Have you ever heard of it?
I've heard of it, but like I said, I haven't watched it.
It's worthwhile. At least the first season was.
Dope.
But yeah, the girl who plays Farmiga's, or I mean, who is her sister... I can't find anything right now. It's really annoying me. Anyway, she's a pretty good actress.
Is she cute too?
Tessa Farmiga. She will be. She's kind of younger. But it's weird. You look at her, and she was born in 1994. So there's an 11-year gap there.
Wow. So
it's kind of weird.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so anyway, it's worth seeing, I guess. I'm glad that we did this. We will have another episode coming out probably in the next 10 days.
Yes, Foo Yuck will return.
All right, so yeah, subscribe to Foo Yuck. Yuck it up. All right, man, I'll talk to you next time.
Ciao.
The next step is the flick of a switch which sends a current of 2,000 volts through the victim's body. Then the current is brought down to 1,000 volts after a few seconds. By this point, the man is unconscious, and the whole process is repeated as many times as necessary until the prisoner is proclaimed dead by the physician on duty. To smell like burning flesh. After a brief examination, we all knew there was more to come. Trickle of blood marked the conclusion to this grotesque execution.
Does the ocean view still look crystal blue? Does the rising sun in the morning sky look the same to you? Here's a friendly smile, much too hard to find. Have we lost our sense of brotherhood with all mankind? Jesus doesn't live here anymore. We've looked everywhere, we need him like before. Look inside yourself, you will find why Jesus doesn't live in any